The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. 4 minutes past nine on this Tuesday, the 17th of September, 2024. How are you all keeping? I do hope you're very well indeed. We look forward to your company for the next 3 hours on the show. Loads of stuff coming up, as you can imagine, including Community Garda information. That's just after 10 o'clock, where you get the very latest news, appeals and information from An Garda Síochána Síochána first here every Tuesday on the 9 till noon show. You can watch that and the rest of the day's proceedings on our social media channels. If you're at home, you can watch us on your smart TV or your Fire Stick on the YouTube app. It's Highland Radio Ireland. We're streaming on the X platform at Highland Radio and on Facebook. Highland Radio News, Sport and Obituaries and Highland Hub. Okay, let's look at some of the stories making the front and inside of the newspapers today. Starting with the Irish Independent, and the scale of dereliction across the country has been laid bare, with commercial vacancy rates as high as one in three units in the worst hit areas as closures of traditional pubs and shop continue in small towns. The number of vacant commercial properties has hit an all-time high, according to the latest report from GeoDirectory, a data business backed by On Post and the Ordnance Survey. Donegal had a commercial vacancy rate of 19.4% in the second quarter. That had jumped by 1.5 percent points in the year to the end of June, the highest increase recorded in the period. So there you have it. Not surprising that we here in Donegal are seeing some of the highest rates. And traditionally, isn't it Ballybofey-Stranorla that has the highest rate of commercial vacancy? A lot of it just sits there, if you know what I mean. I said in an interview last year that, are we counting the same properties again? It's based on active air codes as well, which sometimes I think maybe buildings have been used for different ways or what have you. But when you see an increase, so we've seen a 1.5 increase, you can't ignore that statistic, and does show seemingly a worsening problem, or people doing business in a different way. I'm not really quite sure. I'm just mentioning this because it affects all of us, because it may well affect all of our children, or maybe you're seeing patterns of behaviour in your children and you're wondering why. A new cannabis substitute is causing severe psychosis in young men that requires months of intensive inpatient treatment, the College of Psychiatrists has warned. HHC, which first emerged in 22, is chemically similar to THC, the active ingredient in cannabis, and produces comparable psychological effects. It is commonly available in the form of vapes or added to jellies or chocolate. It is legal in Ireland and has become increasingly popular here in the last year. It is sold widely in shops and is often marketed as safer or less strong alternative to cannabis. So this is readily available. On first look at it, if you're a younger person or whatever age you might be, you might think, well, there's no harm. It's not particularly illegal. And I'm told it's not as bad as cannabis, which I'm told is not as bad as drink, which I'm told is not as bad as cocaine. And on it goes. And that's why people might tend to use it, you see. The College of Psychiatrists said HHC is a factor in about 20% of presentations to adolescent addiction services. It's called on the government to ban HHC using legislation introduced in 2010 to tackle a surge in dangerous but legal substances being sold from so-called head shops around the country. So we're in that space again. You'll remember the head shop stories, won't you? Professor Bobby Smith, specialist consultant, child and adolescent addiction psychiatrist, said these head shops caused a huge amount of damage in young people, and we're seeing a similar trend now with HHC. So I'm not sure if you've any experience of that. If you wish to discuss that, let us know. 086 60 25000. The latest numbers are out from RTE and the front of the Irish Daily Mail, and they show that losses at RTE tripled to 9.1 million last year in an all-time low for the scandal-hit national broadcaster. The deficit for 23 is over three times higher than the 2.8 million notched up the year before, and the worst since the 13 million recorded in 2018, with RTE warning costs are on course to rise again this year as it criticised the TV licensing model. Now, Let's not forget, a cheque has just been written for €700 million for RTE, plus their take in terms of advertising, plus their take in terms of charging us to watch GAA at times, and still they've tripled their losses to €9.1 million. The undisclosed payment scandal resulted in the licence fee income plummeting by €17.3 million in the year in a public backlash, while advertising revenue dropped and general operating costs rose, driven by high inflation and the €9.8 million cost of a union pay agreement kicking in. They've also published the high earners list as well, if it's something that you might be interested in. And it's comparable then, it's compared to last year. So these are figures for 23 compared to 22. Joe Duffy, he's on in the afternoon, of course. He collected €351,000. That's the exact same that he collected in 22. Claire Byrne, she's on €280,000 per year. That's a drop of 40 grand. Miriam O'Callaghan, she's on €263,500, the exact same she was receiving in 22. Ray Darcy, believe it or not, for his show, gets €250,000 per year. His wages are unchanged. Ryan Tobberty still was paid €245,000 in 23. Brendan O'Connor at the weekends, he does two shows at the weekends, €245,000, his pay unchanged from the year before. Mary Wilson is just shy of 200 grand a year. A slight increase, actually. She got a £2,000 pay rise. Brian Dobson, who's recently retired, he collected £194,000 in 2023. Darren Maloney, who is, I think he might work in sport, £186,000. And then George Lee, which I think is quite interesting because I don't really hear George Lee much, or I don't consume much RTE, but he comes on now and again if there's another virus going around or something like that. He's on €185,000. Which is really quite remarkable because I get the same press releases he does for the most part. But I presume he does other fantastic investigative stuff that I'm just not aware of. So that's the pay packets for those in RTE. What about your pay packet? According to the Irish Daily Star, Finance Minister Jack Chambers has promised workers they'll benefit by at least €1,000 per year in the budget, as his party leader Micheál Martin insisted his general election won't be until next February. Money Minister Chambers promised that Budget 25 will put more dough back in people's pockets, which is a phrase I abhor, but anyway, than in previous years. He said that the amount workers and householders will claw back through energy credits, tax cuts and other costs of living measures will add up to a grand. USC will be a central component of the income tax package that I design, he said. We really want to target low and middle income earners and workers in our economy, ensuring that we have a competitive income tax system that rewards work. Progressivity, which is a word I wasn't familiar with, progressivity in how we design that, which is an important component of all budgets that we've developed. So that is Jack Chambers promising an extra €1,000, saving workers €1,000 per year. We shall see. And there's been a round of sort of national interviews on various radio stations with the various party leaders as they meet ahead of the Dáil. I don't know if you've listened to them or how you would rank them. I'm thinking more Simon Harris, Micheál Martin and Mary Lou McDonald. If you've listened to any of those, I'd be interested in your assessment as who do you think is the most competent? Who do you believe comes across as the least competent? I would have my own views as a voter, but that's not for now. The Irish Daily Mirror. A man who had been at a party when he allegedly left an apartment with a young child under his arm has been remanded in custody. The defendant in his mid-20s cannot be named. And the reason he can't be named kind of becomes obvious if you read the reasons why the Gardaí didn't want him named. So I'll just read the paragraph and I think people can make up their own minds. The defendant in his mid-20s cannot be named after Gardaí cited the sensitivity of the case in the current climate. They were granted a reporting restriction order. He's accused that without lawful authority or reasonable excuse, he intentionally attempted to take cause to be detained a child under 16. The man appeared at Dublin District Court yesterday and the attempted abduction case was held in camera, meaning the public could not attend. Now, many of you might message in as it relates to that and make some commentary about what the background of that person may or may not be. We're not really at liberty to read them out as such because we could in some way compromise the outcome of that case, believe it or not. Garda lawyer McDermott told Judge Gerard Jones the man's reply to the charge was, "I was not taking the child anywhere. I'm not a person like that. I do not have any intention with a child. I do not have any bad or unwanted intention with a child." He was remanded and will appear at Cloverhill District Court tomorrow for a bail application. And on to a story that was covered extensively across all news channels yesterday, and it is Hugh Edwards. He's described as a shamed BBC star in the papers today. And obviously, just to be careful, if there's younger people in the car, I'm not going to go into too much detail, but obviously, mums and dads have to make the call on this. It'll only be for about 30 seconds. Shamed BBC star Hugh Edwards described a batch of depraved videos, the type of videos you know he had, as amazing, a court heard yesterday. He also replied, "Go on," when offered some, in inverted commas, naughty pictures and videos of a boy later estimated to be aged between 7 and 9. The obscene material was sent to Edwards by a young paedophile he was paying money to, it emerged. Magistrates heard he gave Alex Williams up to £1,500 in cash gifts. Details of Edwards' behaviour emerged as he appeared in court for sentencing yesterday after admitting in July 3 charges of making indecent images. He's 63 and he's a father of 5. He got 6 months in jail, but it was suspended for 2 years. He must also complete a 40-day sex treatment programme and 25 rehabilitation sessions. Now, this is the only stuff that was found, right, on his WhatsApp. There was other messaging systems that they could not access. He had images. And for him to have those images, stuff had to happen to children. And that had to be videoed. And who is to say the immediate impact it had on those children, the abuse that they suffered to please a pervert like him, what they had to suffer and how that might affect them for the rest of their lives, knowing that it was videoed and it's out there. He gets 6 months suspended sentence. Now, the judiciary will tell you, well, that's in line with sentencing guidelines. Okay, well, maybe that's the problem, because it is impossible not to make a comparison between the recent prison sentences handed out in Britain. Now, the people that was sentenced recently as it relates to activity on the streets and stuff that was said and throwing stuff at police and what have you, they're not innocent people necessarily. You might believe that they have some just motivation, right? But they did do crimes by the state of the law. But their crimes received sentences 1 year, 18 months, 2 years, 2.5 years, 3 years, straight into prison. And we have someone who is effectively making a market for the abuse of children. And then citing mental health as if in some way you're poor mental health. There are, you know, lots of people with bad mental health. I have bad mental health myself at some times. It doesn't mean you're this type of a person, which I think is really quite, I hate when that's used as a defense. Oh, he's gone through a bad moment, but we all have gone through bad moments, but we don't do this to children. He did. And he gets 6 months and 6 months suspended for 2 years or 18 months, whatever it might be. And yet you see the types of sentences handed down for other crimes and the impact, the terrible impact this is going to have on those children and the millions of other children that are impacted by this kind of behaviour. And there's his face for those of you watching. But anyway, that seems to be the world that we live in. I don't know if you have any views on that. 086 60 25000, WhatsApp and text to that number, or give us a call in 07491 25,000. We're going to be back with much more on the 9 till noon show after we take this quick break. Very welcome back to the programme. Right, we're rejoined on the programme by Dr. Kira Steele, who we chatted to a couple of weeks ago on the importance of ventilation in our schools. And we can also talk about it, I suppose, in the context of the COVID inquiry. It's an important issue, and we had to rush it a little bit the last time. So we welcome back onto the programme Dr. Kira Steele. Thank you for your time.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good to have you with us. So for those who didn't tune in the last time, you are a huge advocate, aren't you, of cleaner air in our schools, or cleaner air in our schools. Outline the reasons for us why.
Well, we spend about 90% of our time indoors, and children spend about two-thirds of their day, two-thirds of that time in a school environment. So they really aren't able to make decisions about their environmental controls. So we felt we have to advocate for children in particular in a school environment to make sure that we're bringing awareness about indoor air quality to the health and well-being of children in our schools and other high density indoor environments like healthcare and large offices, for example.
Yeah, indeed. And this is not about having windows and doors open and people sitting indoors with their coats on and what have you. I mean, we have technology and innovation that allows this to happen in just a very natural way that you wouldn't even notice.
Well, it's really part of that. The indoor air quality standards code of practice does encourage ventilation, but not at the expense of other well-being qualifiers like temperature. So ventilation is really important, but in those settings in particular where ventilation can impact on well-being, such as temperature, then we need to use tools like air filters to improve indoor air quality.
And I'll put the same question to you that I did the last time, because for those who may not listening may not have listened before, it might be an obvious one. Do we not need to catch a little bit of stuff, you know, to build up our immune system, make us better? That some might feel that, you know, if kids are raised and taught in a clear environment, that it might leave them more vulnerable when they do actually eventually catch what we're trying to avoid them catching and spreading.
I think what you're talking about there is the idea of immunity debt, and that's not scientifically or medically accepted. Our immune system is a defense against the insults of bacteria and virus. And air filters can collect those from the air. They're usually really small particle size, less than 5 microns in size. And HEPA filters can collect particle matter below 2.5 microns in size. So they're a really important tool to clean pollutants and bioaerosols from the air. So I don't think people are aware that indoor pollution is quite high from VOCs and mold, pollen, dust mite, smoke. There's a wide range of indoor pollutants that can affect health, and viruses and bacteria are one of those. And I suppose
In relation to clean air, obviously, I'm framing questions it based on stopping the spread of airborne bacteria, disease or bacteria, whatever the terminology is. But if you have younger people, and we seem to have a high incidence of lung conditions here in the Northwest, for an example, it would assist, would it, in that the younger people or even those in offices would be breathing less polluted air. So if they had asthma or bronchitis or something, that they would be better off?
Absolutely, 100%. Yeah. And we've got the highest rate of asthma in Europe. And so it's of particular concern to the Irish setting, the Irish context. But asthma COPD exactly can be improved by improving indoor air quality. I mean, those with asthma and COPD who use inhalers know the therapeutic impact of inhaling medication to improve their conditions. But what we want to create awareness is that they can also be improved by improving the quality of the air that is inhaled and breathed as well.
Yeah, okay. Sinead O'Brien, or is it O'Brien? I beg your pardon, Sinead, sorry.
O'Brien, yeah.
Sorry, Sinead O'Brien's from Clean Air Advocacy in Ireland, and we're just running through there with Dr. Ciara Steele, a Donegal GP, of course, about the benefits of clear air, and she's laid out really quite well. I'm not surprised if there's going to be a bit of overlapping in your point of view, but what is your argument for clean air?
Well, hi, Greg. And I'd just like to firstly thank you for discussing this topic and for Ciara for highlighting this issue as a medical doctor. I know for a lot of the members in Clean Air Advocacy Ireland, you know, who have read up on the benefits are kind of going out of their mind and getting very frustrated that, you know, we're 5 years into a global pandemic of an airborne virus and, you know, we're not
not to cut across you, I think that probably is the problem, and that's why I'm trying to distance it slightly from COVID, because obviously there's a lot of learning from COVID, but there's not an awful lot of interest amongst the public in hearing about COVID, if you know what I'm saying. That could be a little bit. But my point is I think, you know, that it's definitely very important. It's brought into focus, and you can say whatever you wish to say. But I think the broader positives, maybe, that we've learned through COVID, i.e., you know, those with asthma or allergies or whatever it might be, to kind of broadens it out to a more interested population. But you can disagree, of course, whatever you feel, Sinead.
Yeah, well, I think it's still a fact that, you know, we are in a pandemic, and the WHO has stated this. But I take your point that I think a lot of people are fatigued by the topic, yeah, and they just would like, you know, to be able to say, okay, well, it's over. But, you know, it's one thing to wish something is the case, and another, you know, we have to also face reality. So I think you're right. Throughout the entire pandemic, we've learned a huge amount. I mean, I certainly have. I don't have a medical background, and I know way more about the benefits of clean air than I did 5 years ago. And I think that, I suppose it's disappointing in that respect that so a lay person like myself and lots of other parents involved in our group and individuals in our group are now having to advocate for this. It's really something that we feel that I suppose should be called upon by public health authorities. Because as you've identified, there are many benefits beyond COVID to cleaning the air. Now, to be positive about it, in Ireland, like, we're actually kind of ahead of the curve, because I know there are other jurisdictions that are petitioning and campaigning to legislate for clean air. But we already have actually a HSA, the Health and Safety Authority Code of Practice, that's now backed up by law as of the 26th of May, 2023. And that's supported by, I'm just going to call it out here, the Safety, Health and Welfare at Work Act 2005. So essentially any employer has to comply with that Health and Safety at Work Act 2005, which mm-hmm. now requires them to take into account the risks regarding their indoor air.
Yeah, with all in mind, I mean, obviously there's a number of schools that are out to tender, or tenders have just been awarded, or going to planning, or going to construction. I mean, really, you can tell the intent from a national perspective here in Ireland, you know, how much clean air and clean air in classrooms forms part of those planning conditions, if at all. Do we know that? Do we have that information?
I believe in the code of practice, new buildings are required to follow the code effectively. Mm-hmm. But even existing workplaces need to assess the indoor air quality. And so that will require, I suppose, utilizing CO2 monitors to see if there's a CO2 buildup in the rooms, what kind of just cross ventilation can be achieved by opening windows and by installing HEPA filters. I suppose from my perspective, it's obviously terrible to live in interesting times when it comes to the spread of viruses and things. But we are very fortunate that we live in a time when we have the technology to be able to actually mitigate mm-hmm. Those risks. So I think the main aim and call of our group is that we just kind of make people aware of their rights and obligations under the HSA Code of Practice. But also that, you know, the tools are relatively cheap and affordable and easy to implement, and actually would have long term benefits for, you know, employers in terms of retaining staff at work, not, you know, them not being ill.
Studies have shown that absence and sickness rates can decrease by 30%. By improving indoor air quality. And the Lancet, which is a well-recognised task force, has done a research study in school settings, and improving ventilation and cleaning the air can improve cognitive function tests and performance equivalent to an extra 6 weeks worth of schooling. So, like, it's really relevant in a school setting. Parents don't really want to be stressed too much by thinking about the next infection. But the problem is that will probably happen now again in the next week or two in school. Mm. But they want to know that their kids are in a safe environment.
Yeah. You know, well, I mean, like, you know, are we boys in a outdoor Nira? So it'll be interesting to see this year if that has any positive impact on when we start seeing these viruses spread. Dr. Steele, do you have any insight into, you know, the standards in terms of air quality that schools must be built to now? Because I think it's an interesting, as I say, I think that would really show the the intent. I know there might be guidelines and expectations, but I mean, if a school is going to construction now, are the students of the future in it going to be sitting in a classroom where the air is purified and treated? I doubt it. They are.
Well, I think some of the new constructions have heat recovery ventilation, which offers some sort of air filtration, but that would be on the level, I think, of about 2 air changes per hour. And WHO guidelines and the HSA code of practice recommend 6 air changes per hour, you know. And so there's a gap there. There's a way to go to be able to improve to meet the standards that are recommended. But 6 air changes per hour can be introduced with portable air filters into the school setting as they exist. You know, it's quite costly to retrofit a whole building, but you can introduce portable air filters into specific settings like classrooms, offices, healthcare facilities. You know, I have a HEPA filter in my office here. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's quite easy to introduce it.
Yeah. The one thing that was kind of interesting in the whole COVID thing, Sinead, was the focus on telling us not to do things like sneeze into our hands and shake hands with someone else, or to wash our hands after we go to the toilet, you know. So obviously, you know, we're kind of some way behind in kind of the basic stuff we should have been doing anyway.
Yeah, well, I suppose, I mean, washing hands, and I mean, that's essential. That's something that we should all be doing anyway. But I think there was a huge amount of emphasis on, you know, the hand sanitizer and surface cleaning. And I know, just anecdotally, I've encountered people in public where, I mean, I do wear a mask when I go into public places, just because I had a very terrible experience with COVID myself and I don't want to repeat it. And I remember one encounter was a parent, and she was getting very stressed about her kids going back to school because she was saying, I don't know what they're going to come home with this time, you know, once they go back. I clean their books, I clean everything. She was concerned that the schools weren't cleaning the surfaces of the tables, but she had no awareness that a lot of these viruses are spread through the air. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a major educational
And do you still do that, Sinead? Like, you still wear your mask? Do you still wipe stuff down?
I don't wipe surfaces excessively, but I do wear a mask in public places.
And are you vulnerable if you don't mind me asking?
I think we're all effectively vulnerable.
Yeah, no, I get you. I mean, in the way that probably most people would understand the question.
Well, I wouldn't have considered myself to be vulnerable before I got COVID. Mm. Let's put it that way. But when I did, my infection was in May 2022. I was out sick for a month. I developed vertigo. I had lost my balance. I had double vision. I couldn't drive. Like, it really impacted my day-to-day activities. And now that I have a baby, I can't afford to miss a month of my life when you have to look after somebody. So I am very cautious myself.
Kira?
I think the Infection Protection Control guidance has learned through scientifically about aerosol transmission, and many of the assumptions that were here from before have improved, you know, the scientific evidence for aerosol transmission of a multitude of respiratory viruses has improved. And the infection prevention control emphasis had been on hand washing, but that guidance needs to emphasise, aerosol transmission precautions. With a lot of campaigns about hand washing, singing your song, you know, singing happy birthday when you're washing your hands, which is all important and relevant. But I suppose the appreciation of the main mode of transmission of a respiratory virus is aerosol transmission, and respiratory precautions need to be taken.
So, Kira, just to sort of wrap it up, what needs to happen next then? Are you saying that the Department of Health sort of needs to consider this and roll out some sort of a plan to actually provide this type of technology that's there to clean the air in our classrooms? That would be the victory in this campaign, so to speak.
Exactly, yeah, in order to mitigate the economic and long-term health impacts and consequences. Parents need to be understanding what they're entitled to under the code of HSA practice for indoor air quality in Ireland. Employers need to understand that, and then government needs to implement tools to enable that easily without barriers in our indoor spaces for health, economic benefits, financial benefits, and for health benefits.
And Sinead, last word from you.
Yeah, to reiterate what Kira said, we really need more education in the public in terms of how these viruses are spread and the tools that are available to mitigate against them.
Okay, listen, thank you so much for your time. It's been lovely speaking to you, Sinead. Thank you, Sinead O'Brien there. Take care of yourself and Dr. Kira Steele. Lovely to chat to you again. Have a lovely day.
Thank you very much, Greg. Thank
okay, any views on that, let us know. 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number, or give us a call on 07491 25,000. Now, of course, we have Breeden's House to Home, Bridgend and Maville on board again today, and we have another €200 voucher to give away. And to be in with a chance of winning, you have to answer this question. They say simply answer, but it's not as simple as it has been in the past. It's a bit of fun, actually. So we're asking you to rearrange the letters to make a word. We're looking for an item sold in Breeden's House and Home. And the word is preact. P-R-E-A-C-T. P-R-E-A-C-T. Reorder those letters to come up with a word that you'd expect to see in a house, of course. And you could win that €200 voucher from Breeden's House to Home, Bridgend and Moville. So rearrange these words. Keep saying words and count instead of letters. The word preact, rearrange the letters and come up with an answer. Right, text your answer, name and address to 086 60 25,000 to be in with a chance of winning. So preact, P-R-E-A-C-T, rearrange those letters to come up with something that you may well walk on in a house. Text your answer, name and address to 086 60 25,000. We'll have another winner of a €200 voucher before the end of this programme today. Going to school back in the 70s, says a listener, we all got Halib Orange, or the drink called Invite Vitamin C, as a precautionary barrier of getting infections. That prevented a lot of sickness down the road. Also recommended from HSE back in January that everyone throughout the country should be on vitamin D from October till April. A caller says, COVID created a lot of good habits for children in my class. Many use a tissue when sneezing, and there's more awareness of hand washing now, which I think is a good thing. I agree with the open windows. I rearrange all my seating to accommodate open windows in class. So that must be coming from a teacher. Good morning. My son cannot even go to the toilet in a certain school. The vape smoke is desperate. They do it in plain sight. Where are all the teachers? We should give that school a ring to see if they accept that there is a problem with vaping in their toilets. There should be no vaping going on in any school in this county in the toilets. There are detectors you can get. You can have inspections. You know, we need our schools to be working against the scourge of vaping in school as well. So we'll give that school a ring to see if they accept that there's a problem of vaping in their toilets and if there are any measures in place to try and avoid it. Because this child's son can't go into the toilet, they say, because of the amount of vape smoke. So we'll chase that up and I'll give you an update on that a little later on. So we were talking yesterday, and it came off the back of some press releases that were released, about the pressures of doing business at the moment. You know, you've got the VAT rate that's quite high. You've got increased wages, increased electricity, other overheads that are making business more difficult. And Daniel Devine is the owner of Patsy Dan's pub, and he joins us on the programme now. Hiya, Daniel. Good morning to you.
Morning, Greg.
How are you keeping, Daniel?
First of all, it's me son that's relating to you.
No problem.
But anyway, I'm keeping very well.
Good, good.
I just wanted to speak about the perception out there from the general public is that the pubs are on 9% VAT, mm-hmm. which isn't true. All alcohol sold is at 23%. And I suppose people will be thinking, the public will be thinking, well, why is the drink so dear if they're only on 9%, but they don't realise that we're nearly three times that.
And also, so we're not going to get into the actual numbers of it, but the margins on drink are quite narrow.
They are. By the time you take all your overheads and expenses and wages and all that out of it, this year we have to enrol the staff on a pension plan, mm-hmm. which is going to add more cost. And this year they... What would you call it? The rates on the buildings are all going up this year massively.
Yeah.
Now they've cushioned it by giving you back some of it for the first year, but that's really all it is just a cushion for the first year, so that you'll accept the high rate of rates. And pubs that pay water rates, building rates, insurance are massive. They're all going up and up and up. Now, we would, in the summertime, we would employ around 15 people in the bar. But we're a small tourist town. And when the government brought in that rate, from reduced it from 13 to 9, as I said, the perception was there that everybody was on 9 that was in the tourist business.
Mm-hmm.
They brought it in to so that premises could maybe reduce the prices for tourism. But the pubs couldn't do that because they were left on 23. The difficulty I had is in a little town like Dunfanaghy, which is going very, very well, I have to say, is that they came into the village, which is one street, and they said, you are going to be on 9%. You are going to be on 23.
Mm-hmm.
And we're all in the business of tourism. We put on music 7 nights a week in the summertime. We're all dependent. We're 90% tourism.
Well, you're the reason why these towns are going so well. I mean, so if you're trying to compete, not you actually, because we'll broaden it out because we're talking about a small area, but if you've got a pub on a street next door to a pub, restaurant, hotel, that's obviously the one business. And that is very much at an advantage with the 9% because what they lose on the swings, they can gain on the roundabouts. But the pub next door is stuck on the 23%, but they're having to compete with this business that has breaks in other areas of their business.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to be down in those premises or anything like that or on 13%, and I'm glad they are on 13 and I hope they get back to 9. But the government introduced that, the increase to that from 21 to 23 during the crash. The minister was on there with you last week, said the company now is going brilliantly.
Yeah.
So I don't see why nationwide they can't bring the VAT back from 23 to 21. And that covers everybody, not just the pubs, that's every business. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure every business could do with that break. You know, it's a big every 2 months. You have to give the government 23%.
Well, 23, it's 23 cent out of every euro that's handed to you effectively, 23 cent goes to the government. That's just in one tax take. That doesn't count water rates and everything else.
Yes, right.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it's one take and it has to be paid every 2 months.
Mm.
Every 2 months. But I just find it hard to take that we're all in the hospitality sector in Dunfanaghy and that the hairdresser could be on 9%. My next door neighbour could be on 9%. And we were on 23. It's very difficult for a government to come into a street like this. And it's like discrimination, really. That's what it feels like.
I mean, and the bottom line is we know how many pubs have closed, right? So there's been a huge drop-off in the amount of pubs in this county over the last 18 years. Between 2019 and 2024, 11% of public houses closed. A lot of those licences then go to off-sales, which perhaps is not the most responsible way to drink compared to sort of, you know, on-site. But, I mean, so the figures are there. 11% of people in the pub trade over the last 4 years have said, we can't do it anymore, enough is enough, and out they went.
Yeah, that's right. And as I said, this year, you've got the enrolment of the pension, and you have the VAT rate, or the rates going up.
Minimum wage.
Buildings and the minimum wage. So that's going to all add to publicans just deciding that enough is enough. We'll close the door. And we'll, you know, because publicans have to do long, long, long hours. You know, some of the pubs might start at 10:30 in the morning, not finish at 12:30 the following morning.
Yeah.
You know,
Daniel, I just want to outline something too that I think we need to understand, in that there's two tiers in this very wealthy country that we have. So we have medium-sized businesses, you know, that aren't in hospitality. And then we've got the big, big businesses, which they're in, you know, pharmacy or data or whatever it might be. And all of those people are making an absolute fortune, and fair play to them. I love watching you drive around in your massive expensive cars, and I'm not jealous. Then you've got counties like Donegal and the rest of us, whereby we're very reliant on tourism and hospitality. So when we talk about pension enrolment, like you get a pension in Abbotts, for example, right? So it doesn't, anyone working in Abbotts, for as an example, they're excluded. They're all above the minimum wage in companies like that as well. So it is the hospitality sector that a lot of these measures actually affect. So the 23% on VAT's only on the booze, effectively, right? But also a lot of these measures and the living wage and all that kind of stuff. And we need that. People need to be elevated, but it is it's the businesses in tourism and hospitality with some of the smallest margins that it actually impacts. Because the middle and higher paying businesses, they're already above all of these measures, if I've made any sense there at all.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I do agree that it's great to get the people enrolled on the pension plans and all that kind of stuff. But for the business itself, it's just very simple. You're either making money or you're not making money. And, you know, you can talk about all these, adding all these things on. But if a business is not making money, they just close the door.
I think there's a lot of pubs and restaurants, Daniel, that are just hanging on by their teeth. And really, a good business decision might be to actually close. But they've got loyalty. They've invested a lot in what they're doing. They've probably got a lot of loyalty to the customers. And probably they shouldn't be, but are trying to keep their head above water. And I think that I think we're going to see far more closures into the future.
Well, we have a very small population, and we have a very small loyal customer base. I have to thank them very much. Those small loyal customer base is just what keeps us open in the winter. Without them, we wouldn't bother opening.
Yeah.
Because all you become is a VAT collector for the government. There could be nothing in it at the end of the day for us, but the government's guaranteed 23%. So, you know, we set up a business abroad out in the islands off West Africa called the Cape Verde Islands.
Mm-hmm.
And that business was set up because it's the opposite season to us. Their season starts now at Halloween and finishes at Easter. It was a safety net that was set up that if in the event, and I'm hoping it won't happen, I don't think it'll happen, but in the event that we had to close for the winter months, we had a safety net built.
Mm.
And that's still in place. And, you know, that's not going to go away because we'll keep that there as a safety net.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And
it's a very clever,
but that was
very clever safety net. But, I mean, it's shocking that you sort of happen to do that to keep the Irish business,
secure. Well, that was done 7 years ago in the belief that the pubs were all going to be closing.
Yeah.
Like, nothing much has changed since that. But Dunfanaghy, now I have to say, Dunfanaghy is an exception to the rule in Donegal. We're one of the best going towns. You know, tourism is booming. It's the winter time is the real struggle.
Mm-hmm.
But my main gripe really is that some companies or people will be on 13% in the tourist town and the rest on 23%. I spoke to a couple of the guys that are doing the surf shops, and they're on 23%. So their whole business is based around
sea. But Daniel, as well, the government need to be a bit cleverer about this, right? Because, you know, we know that Dublin hotels are absolutely ripping us off whenever they can, particularly Dublin hotels. It's not exclusive to that.
Yeah.
Why should they get a VAT rate for doing that? We know you go in there and order a pint, it's 10 or 11 quid at times. You know, why should they be allowed to, this is the hotels I'm talking about, why should they be allowed to rip us off but be rewarded for a reduced VAT rate? And unfortunately, we need a more nuanced system that supports businesses like your son's, you know, that is vital to the tourism industry, that's not ripping people off, but get supports. You know what I mean? So we can't have one rule for Patsy Dan's in Dunfanaghy and another rule for a bar in a hotel in Dublin that's absolutely ripping people off with dynamic pricing and all that crap. And until the government sort that out, we're never going to get through this.
Well, it's those hotels that have caused the problem now for the small hotels.
For sure.
And the restaurants. It's them that's caused this problem because the government's putting everybody up to 13 for those restaurants. That's it's the fault of the conglomerate hotels or whatever, for a better word, that's causing this.
Yeah. 32 euro for fish and chips. You know, you get it for 15, 16 or 17 up here. Down in Dublin, it can be 38 euro. I mean, it's absolutely crazy.
All right, Daniel,
listen, thanks. Sorry, last point to you, Daniel. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, no, it's only as I said, I'll go back to the fact that I wanted to get it across to the general public out there that all alcohol is 23%.
Mm.
They have this perception out there that it's 9% or now to 13.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. I just wanted to get that across because every time I read a paper, listen to the radio, it's all very much it's the pubs that are doing food and it's only the food section of that pub that is on the lower rate. But I'm just glad to get it out there now. let the general public know we're on 23.
All right, Daniel. Good Lovely. Man. Thanks so much. Daniel Devine. He's involved with Patsy Dan's Pubs. His son is the licence holder there. Darren on Facebook. And I get where you're coming from, Darren. And I don't know, I kind of want to move on to some extent, but obviously, you know, the guests we had wanted, particularly Sinead, wanted to talk about the clean air in a COVID sense. But anyway, Darren says, some these business owners, and this is then following on from the VAT conversation, these business owners had no problem turning away people during COVID. They were getting free money, but they also were all part of the community. They were all our friends and neighbours, and that's the only way they could keep the doors open. They were under same direction as we were, whether anyone liked it or not. If VAT was reduced across the board, people would be up in arms about all the hotels who've turned away tourists to accommodate asylum seekers. I think people are more vexed, or certainly have been more vexed in the commentaries and conversations I've had with hotels charging prices at certain times rather than accommodating asylum seekers. But anyway, depends on which circles you move in, I suppose. I'm sick listening to pubs crying poverty. I know for a fact a bottle of Lucozade costs $105, including VAT and retail, in most pubs between $350 and $380. They'd also pour the drink down the throat of a drunk person. If a person can't make money, get out. Well, it's illegal to pour the drink down the throat of a drunk person. But, you know, like $105, including VAT, is fine if they want to charge that, if you want to sit in your car and drink it. But I suppose if you want to sit in the pub with some music playing, or you want to watch Sky Sports while you're drinking your Lucozade and have someone hand it to you with ice and have a bit of a chat and talk to your friends, there is obviously going to be a premium on top of that. Now, if you think $2 or $2.50 per bottle is too much, that's fine. And that's why we have our choice whether we go into places or not. But there is a service charge on top of that as well for the luxury, in inverted commas, of sitting in their premises. It's $3,500 to get an air filtration system put into your house without labour. Open a window and it's free. I know, but you pay in the long, wouldn't you, with fuel bills. I have chickens and pigs kept inside and we have problems with them. They catch every disease going. Cows and sheep stay outside and they're fine. We all need fresh air. And another, the air in Donegal is so clean, you couldn't get any better. In the 70s and 80s in London, you couldn't walk outside with a white shirt on or it would come back black. All right, interesting comments. As always, we're going to take a break for the news and obituary notices. And on our return, we'll have Community Garda information. So stay tuned for all of that. That's on the way.